devices, from business cards to brochures, color copies, high-speed printing, informational booklets, and flyers. Minuteman Press, down that walkway across from Big Top when you're heading to the Food Emporium, offers quality printing at very good prices. Call Frank Maselli at Minuteman Press of New Rochelle, 914-576-0335. In Westchester, 576-0335.
Here's the updated weather forecast for Westchester County and vicinity. We start off with sunshine. Very nice conditions today. Low, comfortable relative humidity and temperatures just about where they ought to be for this time of year, in the middle 80s. The breeze will be out of the northwest at 10 to 15. High pressure moves right across the area tonight and tomorrow, provides us with more great weather. Bright and clear conditions through the overnight. Lows of about 60 to 65, a few spots north down into the 50s. And mostly sunny on Friday. Friday's highs into the mid-80s again with light and variable winds. A little bit more northeast, though, possibly right off the sound during the afternoon. At night, mostly clear, mid-60s. Saturday, sunshine, 85 to 90. And Sunday, mostly sunny. Chances of some late-day thunderstorms or highs of rain into the middle 80s on Sunday. Some of those showers may be left over into Monday, but then a clearing trend for the early portion to the middle of next week. I'm meteorologist Steve Pelletieri for WVOX and WVIP, the Whitney Radio Network.
The latest forecast from the 1460 WVOX Weather Center, brought to you by Entergy and the Indian Point Energy Center, right for New York.
At Entergy, meeting our region's need for reliable, affordable, and clean electricity is an everyday success story. That's because our Indian Point Energy Center supplies up to 38% of the region's power needs. It also produces some of the least expensive power generated in the region. And most importantly, it does not produce greenhouse gas emissions. That's right, zero greenhouse gases. This plays a key role in helping this area improve its air quality. So it should come as no surprise that a growing number of environmentalists, including Dr. Patrick Moore, the co-founder of Greenpeace, say nuclear power is a vital tool in the fight against global warming. To learn more, visit us on the web at www.safesecurevital.com. Because the more you know, the more you realize that Indian Point's clean, reliable, and affordable energy is a big part of the climate change solution.
From the historic city of New Rochelle, home of John Verney, J.A. Valenti Electric, Father Rusty Hesse, and the Sound Shore Medical Center of Westchester, the great and growing hospital for you and yours.
1460 WVOX. Good morning and welcome to Environmentally Sound. I am Bob Levensold, your host for this series on the natural world, education, and culture. We bring you guests from diverse disciplines, scientists, activists, authors, educators, entertainers, and public officials. We seek to stimulate your curiosity, intellect, and passion. Today's news from the natural world. Today is Thursday, July 10th, 2008, the 21st day of summer. We have lost 1 minute of daylight since yesterday, 11 minutes since last we met 2 weeks ago. The sun rose at 5:33 this morning. It will set at 8:28 this evening. We will have 14 hours and 55 minutes of daylight today. That is 13 minutes shorter than the longest day of the year, which was the first day of summer, but it's still one of the longest. Enjoy it. We begin to notice the reduction in daylight hours with the long shadows of late summer. So it goes, as ever, as forever, time immemorial. The moon will rise at 1:56 this afternoon. It will set at 24 past midnight tomorrow morning. We are at first quarter today. Next full moon is on July 18th. The aphelion was on July 4th, and that is the day when the sun was at its farthest from the earth all year. Now, just a little word about what you hear in the background. That is a version of my regular theme, which is Beethoven's string quartet, B-flat quartet number 13. The version you're hearing now is a mandolin duo. I found it by accident, and I'm very happy to have it. And along with playing that for the first time, I'd like to announce my new website, which is now up, www.environmentallysound.org. Please visit as frequently as you like. All programs from now on and some from the past will be online. You can download them, you can listen to them, you can do anything but sell them. And if you do sell them, just send me a few bucks just to keep it right. Next high tides in New Rochelle, 7:21 this afternoon. Yonkers, 5:08. Dobbs Ferry, 5:36. Peekskill, 6:31. And in Haverstraw at 6:18 p.m. Now, our regular feature, names of American service members who have lost their lives in Iraq. May they live on in all of our hearts. 19 service members died in June up to last Friday, the last day for which statistics are available. To date, there have been 4,115 American deaths, 12 more than at our last broadcast, tens of thousands more with grave physical and or mental injuries. Captain Philip J. Dykeman, age 38, of Brockport, New York, a Marine, was one of three Marines killed in Anbar Province on June 26th, which was the day of our last broadcast. The others who died along with him were Lieutenant Colonel Max A. Galea, 42, of Pongo Pongo, American Samoa, a place which I have had the pleasure of visiting and spending some time there in my younger days, and Corporal Marcus W. Prudhomme, 23. I would assume he's from Louisiana, but he's listed as North Miami Beach, Florida. Who am I to question? But I suppose he probably moved down the line because Prudhomme is really a Louisiana Cajun name. All of those three were from the 2nd Battalion, 3rd Marine Regiment, 3rd Marine Division. Also, Specialist Joshua L. Plosica, age 20, of Clarksville, Tennessee. He died when his vehicle encountered a roadside bomb in Baghdad on June 25th. And Sergeant Alejandro A. Dominguez, age 24, from San Diego, California, also a roadside bomb in Mosul, Iraq. He died on June 24th. Major Dwayne M. Kelly, age 48, Willing Borough, New Jersey, and Chief Warrant Officer Robert C. Hammett, age 39, Tucson, Arizona, both of whom were killed by a bomb blast in Baghdad on June 24th. An unusual number of officers, commissioned officers, in this group. We have Lieutenant Colonel Max Galea from Samoa. We have Captain Dykeman from Brockport, New York. We have Major Dwayne Kelly of Willing Borough, New Jersey, and Chief Warrant Officer Robert C. Hammett of Tucson, Arizona. An unusual number of officers and warrant officers in this week's group. How many more American servicemen who are alive today will be gone when next we meet? Each life is a treasure and tragic loss to each of us. May these American servicemen live forever in our hearts, and may this feature come to an end in the very near future, because there are no more deaths to report. Okay, it's time for the Culture Corner, my reviews of plays, ballets, opera, museums, and what have you. Keep in mind that these are my opinions, and you have the right to differ from them, because everyone has the right to be wrong. I saw the Broadway production of Boeing, Boeing. It's a comedy. Bernard has it made. He has a good job, a flat in Paris, and his Bible. His Bible is the book listing all airline schedules for all airlines, which provides him with the means to select air hostesses. That's what they use. I presume it was stewardesses in the original book. Their staggered schedules ensure that never the twain, that is, three, shall meet. So he has three comely air hostess fiancées. He'll never marry them, but they're all his fiancées, from different airlines in different countries. Gloria, a New Yorker with TWA, Gabriella, a hot Italian from Alitalia, and Gretchen, a German with Lufthansa. So how long do you think this idol will last? Correct. Not very long at all. This is pure farce, doors opening and slamming, and matter and antimatter flipping in and out of them. Gretchen in one door, Gabrielle out another, Gloria in the wings, on and on. And Bernard has also chosen his gals with the same first initial. It is easier to monogram towels. This is a prime example of good acting, staging, and directing making a ding-dong script into a fun play. Without great timing and staging, this book is a bust. Fortunately, Boeing Boeing does have these qualities in spades. All the actors are over the top, posing and shouting, menacing and enticing, sexy and, above all, funny. This play is 46 years old, written by French playwright Marc Camoletti, first performed in 1962. The 65 American movie starred Tony Curtis and Jerry Lewis. The staging is over the top, too. At one point, Bernard literally climbs a wall and hangs on. Many of the characters spend much of their time on the floor, rolling, crawling, beseeching, wrestling. One very risky bit of blocking business has Bernard tossing a spinning full-size globe to Robert, who catches it while it's still spinning. Robert, played by English actor Mark Rylance, who is reprising his London role, is schnooky enough to carry off the diffident character played by Jerry Lewis in the American film. The acting is good all around. My favorite was Mary McCormick as Gretchen, the Lufthansa girl. Her Germanic posings and pronouncements capture the stereotypical, "You will show me your papers," which no doubt makes gentler Germans cringe. Long moments of body language and facial expression without dialogue and double, triple, and quadruple entendres are what makes this play succeed. If your lips are not spray painted on your face, you will smile, very likely laugh heartily. Although there was one lady in our row who just did not crack a smile, while the lady on my left just couldn't stop her hilarity. I was afraid for her health. I thought she was going to pass out. High jinx, low jinx, and all the jinx in between. If you want a serious play, stay away. If you want a passel of fun, come and get it at the Longacre Theater on 48th Street. All right, you are listening to Environmentally Sound on AM 1460 in New Rochelle, New York. If you are listening in, and this is in honor of July 4th, if you're listening in Patriot, Ohio, Celebration, Florida, America, Oklahoma, Flagstaff, Arizona, or Independence, Oregon, or Missouri, you have logged on to www.wvox.com and you are listening live. My first guest is Michael Lasko, President and CEO of Taxi, the world's leading independent A&R company. As such, he matches talent with those who need material, be it for movie soundtracks, albums, ads, TV series, whatever. He is an astute observer of the music industry and is environmentally aware as well. He saves 93.3 trees a year. How does he do this? Speaking to us from Los Angeles, where it is shortly after 7 a.m. Welcome, Michael Lasko.
Good morning, Bob. How are you?
Good morning, Michael. How is it? It's 7:17 out there.
Well, I should warn your audience that I went to bed at 1 a.m.,
okay.
Couldn't sleep, and took a Sominex.
Oh, no. Did you sleep?
Sominex, and woke up at 3:45, 4:30, 5:30. Finally, at 6:45, I crawled out of bed and just said, oh, what the heck.
So that's not what you said.
My first cup of coffee, but I'm pretty loopy.
I know what you
can't
said.
Can't be held responsible for the content of today's show.
Well, that's just too darn bad, because we're holding you absolutely responsible. This program will be uploaded on my website, www.environmentallysound.org, for all the world to hear, so you better be on your sharpest.
I'm trying.
How's your weather in L.A. today, Michael?
You know, I got to say, I'm looking out the window. We have a big arched window in our kitchen that's, I don't know, 7-8 feet tall and 6 feet wide. I'm looking out at giant pine trees and a mountain range and giant star maples. And the
wow.
Sun is cresting over the mountain, and it's absolutely gorgeous.
So it sounds like you live in quite a nice place. I guess the music industry has been better to you than it is to many artists these days.
Well, yes, I live in a very large mansion, Bob.
Well, in a nice location.
We're fortunate to live in a suburb of L.A. that's surrounded by mountains, and we were lucky enough to get a house that's got a great view, but certainly not a mansion.
No.
Anyway,
but you are doing.
The music industry is not kind to many artists. Basically, illegal downloading has all but wiped out the industry. And I know that a lot of people justify the illegal downloading of music by saying, what the heck, one less private jet ride for Madonna. But the truth of the matter is there's a whole economy of people that are affected by this. And it's not just the major rock stars who are used to making millions of dollars a year. The people that worked at record stores, the guy who swept the warehouse, the truck driver that delivered the CDs, people in the art department, people in the PR department.
What about the songwriters? The songwriters themselves.
Sales and marketing department. It's really quite amazing. Being on the inside, I get to see the numbers of people that lose their jobs literally on a monthly basis. I just heard about 200 people in BMG Music about 7 or 8 days ago that lost their jobs, and this goes on every month. So,
now, Michael?
Yeah.
First of all, you're talking about the people in the industry that are not artists. What about songwriters themselves? Does this discourage artists from creating, and how does the average songwriter today make a name for him or herself?
Well, I don't know if it discourages people, because true artists will, I believe, create whether there's a paycheck attached to it or not. It's kind of an addiction for them. As far as making a name for themselves, everybody talks about the new music industry and how the internet is so wonderful. You can put your music up on MySpace or Facebook or YouTube and get discovered, and it's true. Some people do, but the days of people having mega hits or even moderately large hits where they can earn several hundred thousand or a million or a few million a year, I think are behind us, and what we're going to see in the future is kind of a new music economy.
Okay, so if you do achieve recognition by uploading something, say, on your own website or on YouTube or one of those. If you do put it up and a lot of people hear it and like it, they just download it and share it with all their friends. How does that very successful artist make a dollar off of that song?
People would make the argument that they could go out and tour, that they build an audience by giving away the music, and then they go out and tour, and that's where they make the money from touring and selling T-shirts. But for a new artist, I don't know that that's so easy. Radiohead gave away their CD. Basically, it was several months ago, Radiohead said, we're putting our new CD online. You can pay for it what you will. And they had a fan base already, though, of 1.2 million people in their database. And they built that up over a 10 or 15-year period with their major label. What about if you went out with your music today and tried to do the same thing? I don't believe that that model would work for you.
So did Radiohead get contributions, or did people just say thanks for the free music?
I know I'm going to misquote numbers here because it's been a while since I read this, but I believe something like 6% of Americans paid for it. There were a few million dollars generated, and they probably made more than they would have made had they put it out through a major label, where about 85 cents on the dollar goes to the label and not the artist. But again, if you or I put out a record today, we have no fan base of 1.2 million people. How are people going to find the website, hear about it, go to it, pay anything for it? So the model only works if you've got an existing fan base.
Well, let me just suggest this. It's when people like something, they send it to all of their email list and so on and so on, and that number geometrically progresses. It's not just possible but probable that that something that's really a hit reaches millions of listeners within a day.
It's certainly conceivable. I've certainly seen examples of it.
So there's your fan base.
I've seen examples of it, but just not in the kinds of numbers we're used to seeing with a record company and its marketing machine behind an artist.
Yeah.
There's no question that there are exceptions and that there will be cases, and I hope for the sake of artists and songwriters that this whole concept grows geometrically. However, I think what happens is that the music gets given away geometrically, and when it gets given away, it doesn't mean that the email list is coming back to the artist for them to build a fan base.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
The exposure goes outward, but the fan base information doesn't come back.
I get you. Unless you just keep getting hits on your website because they've been directed there and they sign up or something. Yeah, I get it.
Right,
okay.
They have to sign up.
So,
you know, that might be a very small percentage of people that are willing to give up their email address.
Okay, now, I'd like you to discuss the future of the music and the recording industries and your company, which is Taxi.com, and how that fits in and how you make your living, Michael.
Okay. We are a find 'em and filter service for the record industry and for film and TV music people and video game music people. When they have a need, whether it be a song or a need for an artist, they tell us, we tell our members who subscribe to the service for $300 a year. They're all over the world, more than 100 countries. And they get a list from us twice a month, updating them on what the industry is looking for. So they might see a listing like a vice president of A&R at a major label looking for songs a la Faith Hill's second album for a female artist. And they go, hey, I've got the perfect thing. They upload it to us on the internet. We have a team of unbelievably well-qualified people sitting in our office that listen to about 250,000 songs a year for each of those opportunities. And they pick the stuff that is really, truly good enough to go to a Faith Hill or to be on a TV show or be in a feature film and is on target stylistically for what the person that the company is looking for, and we send it to them. So it's a great way for unsigned artists and songwriters to get their music into the hands of very major people in the industry that have the power to sign deals, where some kid in Peoria probably didn't have that opportunity before.
So you're functioning as the A&R people and the publishers of years ago, Tin Pan Alley people, who somebody could walk in off the street. I remember walking in off the street, guitar in hand, and playing live for some of these fellas.
Well, you must be really old, Bob. That was a long time ago.
Well, yes, thank you. Thank you for informing everyone of that. Well, I did say in the intro that I had visited Pongo Pongo American Samoa. Well, that was before I got drafted in the Army. Does that help you?
Okay, there you go.
For my age? Of course, I know your age, too. I have it written down here somewhere. But what's the difference? Now, if you send something out that says something like the Beatles' Sergeant Pepper, and somebody just isn't familiar, what about all these references that you have to know? You have to know about people.
You know, it's called the music business for a reason. You've got to know music and you've got to know business.
But what if you're a songwriter? You're just a songwriter. What if you're a songwriter? You listen to Mozart. You don't really listen to pop music. Do you really have to know it to sell to it?
That's what the market wants. It's kind of, not knowing it is kind of the equivalent of saying, I'm going to design a car, but not knowing what a car looks like or what modern cars that attract buyers in the marketplace look like. If you want to submit music that is relevant for the buyers in today's market, you need to know what it is that they enjoy and they're buying and write the equivalent of that.
So you can't just, I couldn't just send you a song and say, this is a great song, Michael, see what you can do with it.
No, that was kind of the old model where somebody would hear a great song and go knock on door after door after door. I flipped the whole thing. You know, as a 14-year-old, I filled in one summer for the manager of the shoe department at my dad's store in a farm town in Illinois. And I quickly realized that when you're selling shoes, people come in looking for a size 7.5 Potassois pump with a medium heel. They need something specific. So I thought in the music industry, people are always looking for something specific, yet they have to kind of wait for a manager or an agent or somebody to show up at their door with that sort of thing. So I thought, wouldn't it be cool if they told me specifically what they're looking for? I put that out to the artist and songwriter community, and they sent specific stuff back. And all we had to do was make sure it fit the niche and was of high quality. Send it to the industry. So I created a better dragnet, I guess.
Okay, Michael, we only have a couple of minutes. I have many more questions on music, but I also said in the intro that you save 93.3 trees a year. How do you do that?
Well, we used to send out those opportunities on paper in the mail, and then it dawned on me one day that the Internet was a great way to send it out. So we started sending them out on the Internet, and over the years, the numbers of people getting it by mail have dwindled down, and now we have a few hundred left that are still getting it on paper, so we've decided to just stop sending it on paper. I'm willing to take the loss of business. It will account for thousands of dollars, maybe tens of thousands of dollars a year, but even though it's only 93.3 trees that we'll be saving, and we did the math on that, I figure we're one business, and if, let's say, 1,000 other businesses across America save 93.3 trees. That's 93,000 trees.
Well, Michael, it's not just 93.3 trees, but it's all the insects and squirrels and birds that live in those trees.
Right.
Okay, Michael. No, actually, we have another minute. Sorry, I misread the clock. What is the future of the recording industry with so much stuff free? Is it all specific placements of tunes to, as you say, video games and so forth? Is that the whole thing?
I believe that there is, yes, that the days of the big megastars are over and that the average person can probably create himself an income equivalent to having a regular day job. So kind of I forget the term I used with you in our pre-interview, but I think a lot of people can make $50,000, $100,000 a year by getting their stuff placed.
But no more superstars, right? Well, unfortunately, we do have to get out of here, Michael. I do appreciate you waking up early. It's been a very stimulating interview. There's so much more to know, but thanks for coming on.
My pleasure, Bob.
Okay, bye-bye. Enjoy California. this is Environmentally Sound on WVOX AM 1460. If you're listening anywhere but our listening area, WVOX.com. We'll be right back.
Live, this is the flagship station of Whitney Media, 1460 WVOX, and worldwide at WVOX.com. Now, the latest update from Fox News Radio.
Fox News Radio, I'm Lori London in Paradise, California.
Coughing, and I have no more energy to cough anymore.
Smoke fills the air from a wildfire that's threatening thousands of homes.
Excessive heat warnings in effect. It's been over 100 degrees in many places. Wind swirls in the canyons.